start the first part of this session so you can understand what we did, and then Eudora will be coming in. Eudora and I are partners. We are partners in preventing things, so I wanted to say it's been a real gift to be able to have all our colleagues here. And if you want to ask questions afterwards, some of our Nurse Healing Partnership nurses can also share what has happened since we introduced this program. And one of our colleagues, unfortunately, who worked on this initiative is not here today, Lisa Whitfield-Harris. But I have no relationships to disclose. In Philadelphia, I think our model has been a little different than perhaps some of the Nurse Healing Partnerships across the country, in that a lot of us who came here were academicians. So we had this idea that what we're doing is a great program, but we still needed to ask questions. We still had to gather information so we could make the program better for the participants that we serve. So strategies change over time, but we had to use local information to be able to have our profiles for our participants make a difference when either you're writing a grant proposal or communicating to your elected officials about what were the characteristics. For example, you know now that our community is very violent and has involved our families in many ways. And we wanted to do quality improvement. It's one thing to be able to look at the National Service Office measures, but internally, we wanted to be able to improve our way of relating to clients and participants and being able to determine how best we could retain them in the program. We have most of our dropouts in the program during infancy and toddlerhood. And this is what I would call our retention busters. We want to keep 60% of our participants. But again, all of the characteristics that we presented in a previous presentation are here, particularly the TANF requirements. When David Old started this, it was AFDC, which meant a mother was not required to go to school, go to training programs, or seek employment, nor was it a five-year lifetime limit. But several things that we feel are really characteristic of our clients that is almost a common experience is they have frequent moves, have inadequate housing, and they lack available housing. So Eudora has helped us understand better what the definition of homelessness is over time. Now, I had a client years ago when I was working in home visiting in Camden, New Jersey. She was convinced she had a regular, adequate place of living at night, except it was her boyfriend's car. But in her definition, she had a place to go. However, that is not typically what's designated for overnight stays for months on end. And people double up. And I know that we've probably been working in a lot of communities like we do with low income, with inadequate housing. You'll have multi-generational households, you'll have boyfriends, friends, even strangers in homes that you would be very surprised could house 20-some people at times. And also some of the reasons why they're doubling up we listed there. Well, the search for funding really started about 4 years ago when some of our nurses were graduating clients. So I implemented a form, which I know some people here, Nurse Family Partnership nurses, might roll their eyes at because it was another form. But it really was looking at the graduates so we could gather better some of the characteristics about why they were still in the program. And we found that the frequency of moves and the housing stock and their current living status really meant that there might be an opportunity to develop a model that we could seek support for and have a skilled professional come in to work with our clients. So we did 2 years of work to be able to find out that at least 30% of our graduates moved 1 to 5 times within their program, and we had some who moved 5 times in 1 year, and we also had one mother that was, and there may probably are others too, but this was a narrative from one of our nurses who said she moved 5 times the first week after she had her baby and ended up in a shelter. But I had a lot of naysayers, and you'll know that in cities like us, like Detroit and Philadelphia, some of us who are old cities, East Coast cities, housing's been a problem here for 30 years, why would you want to do something? And so the response was, well, if you do nothing, you accept what the status quo is. So I submitted this proposal to the Pew Charitable Trust, who came back with many questions. Can you show me it's been done anywhere else? I can give you research on homeless populations, but I cannot give you any findings on nursing home partnership. But they took a step and they supported us for $200,000 for 3 years. To be able to for us to look at how we could help our participants become more independent and productive in their community. So we said we wanted to increase our retention. We wanted to document mobility patterns. We wanted to attempt to improve employment and school graduation rates. And these are some of the characteristics, some of the things that we'd want to do. So then we started looking for housing specialists who would share some of the common interests of our nursing home partnership staff with having a social justice focus. New Philadelphia was a role model. And at the bottom, looked at road boxes, detours. And I want to introduce to you Ms. Eudora Burton. Thank you.
I like to say, I think it's afternoon now. Good afternoon, everyone. As you know, my name is Eudora Burton. And I have no relationships to this close. These are my credentials. I want you to know that I have 10 years specifically working with the homeless population families. So I really understand this population and I have a great passion for them. We also want you to know that the reason why this program works is communication. And we have excellent nurses, and the nurses are really the heart of this program. And what happens is that I complement the services that they already provide to the clients. So they really identify the needs of the clients in a way that they tell me who is high risk. And need somewhere to live, a safe environment for them, whether they're pregnant or have a child. One thing that I think is very important is that I'm very honest with the clients when I start to work with them. And I encourage them to be honest with me also. One of the key important things that is important is that we have collaborative networks with the organizations you see there. One thing that Kay mentioned was that we can serve illegal moms that are here illegally. And one of the programs that help us with housing is Achievability. Achievability is not allowed to ask moms this type of information, their housing status, their legal status, and that type of thing. What they do is the mom must be working full-time and she must be in a part-time program. Also, they will work with a mom until she acquires her bachelor's degree, which is really great. So the housing, the way they look at it is just one of the perks of being in the program, but they really look to make a family self-sufficient. City Council has been a great help to us. Career Wardrobe has been a great help because clients can go on an interview or whatever they need to do or to appointments and be able to have something very nice to wear. Another group that's been very helpful for us is the Family Service Provider Network. And the reason why they've been so helpful is because, as Kay disclosed, what we found is that a lot of our clients, our participants, are really homeless, although they didn't know that. And so with the definition of being double up, living in a place that's not permanent or not their own, I had to do a lot of educating with our clients. Basically, most of the information we receive from our clients is self-reporting. And so we depend on them to be honest and tell us what their situations are. One thing we know that they've moved a lot. And a lot of times they expect the nurses to know where they're moving to. And nurses don't find out until they get there. And some of the answers that they've been given is that, I thought a neighbor would tell you. So it's very interesting. One thing about our program is that when I work with clients, it is not mandatory that they work with me. So, but they like the fact that I'm going to help them get housing. So a lot of times they'll try not to meet with the nurse. And so what I do is bring them back and say, it is important that you meet with your nurse. I am just a person here to complement the programs to help you do what you need to do. The other thing about our program is our demographics. At least 135 clients have been enrolled, referred to me to work with them with the housing. 118 of them have actually went through the intake process. This is our demographics for our clients, is that the average age is 20.8, the minimum age is 15, and so forth and so on. And our clients are all over the city. Although their nurse started off working with them in certain areas, they move a lot, so they end up throughout the city. Oh, I'm going the wrong way. I'm sorry. And this is just a map that one of my colleagues was nice enough to make it look real pretty. But they're all over the city. This is actually a workshop of me working with the clients, a picture of me working with the clients in the workshop. And although this picture might look very, very dire, like it's no hope or any help for these clients, it's a lot of promising results that we get from them. One of the things that you have to understand, because they are they're in crisis when we first started working with them, and because they probably were never told what's the right and wrong things to do, what's out here for them, the services that they can receive, because they have limited resources or don't know where to obtain resources, they have to be re-educated. And so I show them how to do time management. In other words, you can't show up for appointment a half an hour later and still expect to receive services. I help them to set goals. They set their own goals because I want them to be realistic. And it just goes on to tell you some of the things that I do for them. But these are areas that we really focus on. Their education on housing. I assist them in identifying housing by really looking. You can't really work with a person without looking at the whole person. In other words, I could put you in a house, but will you be able to retain the house? Will you be able to pay the rent every month? Will you be able to retain a relationship with a landlord? And so they have to understand what's expected. So when they come to the workshops that I provide for them, I try to have presenters to touch on every part of their life, whether it's credit repair, whether it's criminal justice issues, whatever their need is, I try to help people address their challenges. Even with evictions, I let them know that this is something you want to avoid. You want to communicate with your landlord. If you're going to be late, let them know I'm going to be late. You know, and you have to keep a job. One of the problems with this population is that they go by the myth that housing is free, because they've talked to their aunt in their community, they talk to their cousin, they talk to a next door neighbor who has gone through a program, maybe like Section 8, and they say, oh, we don't pay rent. But they don't tell them the work that they went through to get to where they are. So they assume that they're just going to go into housing. So it's important to let them know there is no free housing. Even in shelter, there is a shelter fee. Regardless of what your income is, if it's $10, $20, it's a percentage of that money. Another reason why, these are some other things that we address, educating them on the new programs that's coming out. Have anybody heard of rapid rehousing? This is a program that, because of the collaboration with other agencies, I meet with leaders, heads of shelters, and also a transitional housing programs. And they receive funding from the Office of Supported Housing, which is in Philadelphia our main homeless, albeit organization. And they have it set up in such a way, if you don't go through their program, well, then you can't get support in housing. And so being at this table with these individuals, they were developing and receiving funding because OSH, even though they want to direct how money is spent and who can take who, they didn't want to be responsible with the work of who gets what money to prevent them from becoming becoming homeless or to help them overcome that status. So they designated this funding to them. So finding out real early on about these fundings, it helps me to better serve the clients that I serve. Lessons learned is that helping clients really understand the importance of proof of income. That, you know, it's very interesting to meet people that are living off of quote unquote no established income, only food stamps and medical. So I help them understand your boyfriend or the baby of the father is not your proof of income. You know, your cousin or the friend that you live with are doing other works that's not necessarily established and considered legal. It's not your proof of income. So you need to report if you have the father of the baby involved, you need to, even if they're not involved, you need to give this information to TANF, which is our welfare department here, and let them know that this father is the father of your child so that you can get cash, what will lead to you going to a program that will educate you in getting the job. They will pay for your child care. They will pay for other things that you need. And plus, when you go and apply for housing, the first thing they're going to ask you is your proof of income. So helping them understand how important this is. This also brings into the fact that I have to work with the fathers also. And working with the fathers, I had to let them know that it's not just the mother's responsibility to take care of this child, it's also your responsibility. And I'm able to reach a lot of fathers which have a lot of control over the moms. And once I get them all on the same page, we can work better together. But I want you to know that this is really the lessons learned that I found in working with these families are that affordable housing will continue to be challenging with low-income families, and that it's important for them to get the education that they need to retain housing. So when I work with a young mom that is not old enough to get an apartment, then I have to work with the needs of that whole family, whether that means helping them understand weatherization so that they can fix up their home to live in, or whether that means that I might have to help mom find a job. Whatever it takes, by any means necessary, I do that to make sure that our families are successful. This is also working with the families. You see the babies are there. In a lot of programs, babies can't go with moms to when they want to get services. But I let the babies come, and I bring the moms out of their home environment so that they learn how important it is to get out and receive services. Because when you're providing services to someone in their home, what happens in a whole room of people? Everybody chimes in, right? That's right. You should do this. And so the confidentiality is gone. And they're just making decisions based on what someone else says. So I let them see that there is hope for them, that they can be successful, and we do have some clients that are successful and doing well. Thank you very much.
Thank you all for coming, and I'm amazed that we haven't gone over time. We will entertain questions, comments. Anyone who has something to make observation? No, you don't have to. Well, I'm not going to speak on behalf of Chris, because Medicaid is something you can't, an illegal mother-to-be cannot get. The child that was born in the United States can get that. It depends on the state. Chris, do you want to come and speak to?
Just watch this cord.
Actually, the criterion is Medicaid eligible. So they can, right. No, and but as case experience in the Philadelphia, they end up 100% Medicaid eligible.
So my second question attached to that is, you don't receive any Medicaid funds.
No.
We do. Let me explain. No.
But Chris won that. Oklahoma gets Medicaid funding. I think
it's
a lot more.
Louisiana, that's why I'm asking. I'm the program manager for Louisiana.
Well, every state has a different medical assistance interpretation, and I could spend 10 minutes, and so could Tara, talking about the decisions that have been made at the state about how we can bill for medical assistance, and the nurses here would say the same thing. We cannot bill for MA until the baby is 61 days of age or older. We cannot bill before that because we have this wonderful program called Healthy Beginnings Plus here, which there are no outcomes, but the state says that they give all the prenatal clinics that money, and all we've done is ask them to give outcomes, because we are not Healthy Beginnings Plus. It's a very different model, but the dialogue has not gone very far. What has happened to us, though, is we've learned all the tricks of MA. You know, all the nurses have to have their MPI numbers, we have to apply for MA, we have to do the billing. This wasn't something when we started the program we thought was going to be another responsibility. All the nurses enter their MA billing because it's a professional encounter with their signature. So it's not a delegation we can give to our administrative assistant here in Pennsylvania, at least we don't. However, if you visit someone October 30th and the baby just turned 61 days of age and you submit the bill, you will not get paid. It has to be the first of the next month. So you have to be relative, and you probably have some of the same strategies. We receive $77 for an MA visit. That's what we get. I don't know how I could compare with you, with Oklahoma, etc. There was a movement here, as Tara would say, they wanted us to become case managers instead of nurses, and that would have significantly reduced even the $77 per visit. Now remember, our visits are 61 minutes or longer. It's not like a 15-minute increment. Chris?
Yeah, in Texas, we don't receive Medicaid dollars, but we're looking at being a CPW provider. But at this point in time, the state has not really established that program well. So it's just case management and a very small amount. We are part of the Compass Center, which is a federally qualified healthcare center. And so we cross-subsidize our program. Right now, we're fully funded by the Health and Human Services Commission. We thought we would fully benefit from it, but the NSO have very strict, and you might, I don't know what you will say about this, but the NSO has a very strict constraint in student involvement. So they're not allowing us to have any student involvement during the first year. So at this point in time, the state office is working with NSO to develop rules and regulation regarding student involvement in the program, and we're still waiting.
But in regard to students, we did get national service.
Right, and we have looked at the draft of the rules and regs that the state has begun to draft, and they are pretty restrictive.
They are?
Yeah.
You have to get their buy-in to whatever you do. I've worked with the
hard to see. Who has another question, comment? One in the back, please, and then we'll come back down this way. Yeah. You have to speak louder.
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I
thank you.
Well, we have nurses who just graduated and nurses who've been in the field for 40 years. So we in Philadelphia enjoy our diversity of not only age, but of experience. And we have humbly learned we want the best nurse possible for the program. So if you graduated and you have passed your boards, call me. I can tell you. We'd love to have you on a list. Because you never know, as Chris is saying, there must be something in the water that has your nurses expecting. So you always have something. And although we can't always guarantee, I'm going to ask Emily to stand up. Miss Emily graduated from Villanova thanks to her faculty at Explaining Nurse Family Partnership. And Emily called me up after she graduated. I said, pass your boards. But in the meantime, we had an opportunity to have a Nurse Family Partnership intern. So she worked with me all summer. Vacancy came open. She's a new Nurse Family Partnership nurse. So
the only thing I would add to that is that the Nurse Family Partnership Network for the curriculum, one of the model elements is that you do have a bachelor's degree and preferably a master's degree for supervisors.
All right, we'll walk our way down and come around. But first I want to recognize the young lady here with a hand up. It's your turn. Oh, well, Tara, I'm going to test it.
I figured it was more of a Tara question.
It's a Tara question, but it really is a question we all have.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot. You know, I just look at the paper, and I've humbly realized how much paper there is. And I must say, in Philadelphia, I made more paper because we have our local, a local data collection process. Tara.
When Dr. Olds first developed this program, the clinical information system was developed strictly to measure research. It was strictly just to say, here's our process and are we meeting the outcomes that were intended. Never anticipating that the replication would grow so quickly, the system hasn't been able to keep up with that. The National Service Office completely recognizes the need to embrace electronic record keeping, and it's something that we are currently invested in and also are looking at enhancing our clinical information system. And our hope is that, I don't know, I can't speak to what that vision looks like and if it will be compatible with every single health department's electronic record keeping system, but our hope is that it will be as compatible as possible with as many of those organizations as possible.
That is actually an issue right now because we have an electronic medical system, management information system in our primary care center, and we have wanted to incorporate the Nurse Family Partnership program into it. But because of the interoperability issue between the system at the NSO and the state, we have not been able to do it. We do use the scheduler and some of the management capability or functionality, but in terms of tracking data, we don't do it.
I see other questions. And I don't know how to take them in order, so I just I'll try to be fair and take them from the back forward. Yes, the lady in the white sweater. I worked on her.
Yes, I forgot to acknowledge the great help that I got, the motivation and the help in getting started by Kay.
I mean, I kept saying, you should do it, you should do it. But she really wanted to do it herself.
Right, but in fact, she learned more about the state legislature initiative, and she alerted me to it. And so it was probably about between 9 months to a year.
Depends on funding. Uh-huh.
Right, it does depend on funding, but I'd also say that I have a wonderful pediatrician colleague who's in Houston, Texas, who also developed a nurse-family partnership, and he was here in Philadelphia, so I kept talking about it, and he said I want to do it. So he's got one on Texas Children's.
It kind of goes with my second question, like what recommendations or advice or what would you give to somebody who wanted to initiate this program in their county?
I would say some things, and Tara will say a few other. First, you need to get with people who have like-minded services or really care about the individuals. You must be realistic about your funding opportunities. And so it might take 2 or 3 years for you to get the funding you need. Because you want to think about long-term. You don't want to start 1 year and then say to your families, well, I can't follow you next year because there isn't any funding in place. Your idea is you want to keep your funding and your sustainability over time. But that's one thing, Tara.
Yeah, I would just echo Kay's comments. I've been working with some organizations for 3 or 4 years now that still have not implemented the program because they can't find sustainable funding.
But that doesn't mean you should just, right. Don't be, we're not talking to be naysayers here.
Yeah.
This is we're the opposite of the naysayers, I hope. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm Barbara May.
Oh, Barbara, how could the kindred spirit here from Camden? Well, we're looking at, you know, our obviously retention, but we only have funding for 3 years, and this is not funded through the state. So we would have to start looking for other opportunities to make this happen. If I were to have my recommendations, and I know people in Philadelphia have heard me say this a long time, it would be to have someone like housing specialist working on life skills as a supplement, but also having a mental health specialist. And I mean, I'm sure if you're working in communities, regardless of whether it's a nurse family partnership or another one, we just have so many needs that are extraordinary that our nurse family partnership nurses are not able to do. And it needs to be like a mobile therapist until people themselves can make a move outside of their home and their environment to seek good help. But those aren't necessarily, now, they're not necessarily in Pennsylvania, but I would stay in this city of New York. They do have a mental health therapist, they have a social worker. So it depends on the model and how much money you're coming in and how much the governor and mayor like you. Right, Tara?
Yeah.
I see other comments. Yes. Go ahead.
That relationship based
Yes, the Combest Center staff is more than 50% bilingual. So we have that core of people who can translate. We also have one of the full-time nurse home, well, they're all full-time. One of the nurse home visitors is bilingual. And so if some translation is needed, then they work very closely with each other. So. If needed, yes. But most of our clients are bilingual as well. There's really very, very few who are, I mean, these are young kids. I mean, these are very young moms. And so they're acculturated, and if we do need a translator, then the nurse home visitor who is bilingual will go with them.
There's a question back there. Yes? Hi, Irene.
We're a history of the local health department.
Yes.
Originally, our funding was through DHS here locally, and the subcontract was with the health department. And then the way the funding moved from local to state, we are now with the state. And there are pros and cons with having formalized relationships with your local health department. And we have found that for our nurse family partnership at this point in time, we've been able to be more creative and more able to work with people across the whole city than they were with the health department's parameters. That doesn't mean that we're very supportive. We have an informal relationship now with them, and we refer a lot of clients to them, but we're not formal. But there are other, Montgomery County has a health department that does nurse family partnership, so it's very different. Right, Tara?
Yeah, in fact, in Texas, we have two or three implementing agencies that are based in the local health department.
It depends on your funding. You know, you do what your dollars are telling you to do and your contract is telling you, and you have to be very practical about that. But in this city, we were restricted to zip codes, and now we can serve the entire city. So that's important for us because our clients have moved. So it just depends. I mean, we're very supportive, they're very supportive, but not fiscally. Thank you for your comment. We have run over, but it's been wonderful to have this dialogue. I appreciate it.